Hello,
Hi.
Casey.
We started talking at the same time.
Oh, well, too bad.
All right. Hi, Josh. So this podcast is best experienced with headphones.
Yes, this is true. If you put on headphones, you'll see why. We might talk about it later, but we'll let you see for a little bit. I have a warning that there might be a point when when Casey just in the editing room just cuts off the podcast. Because I am not in a room with a locked door currently. I don't think anyone will come in, but I am in the room lounge of my dormitory. And if that happens, we're just going to say the podcast ends there and cut.
Yeah, I might like add something in saying, yeah, all right, we're done. Have a great time, whatever. I also might not do that. Depends how much of an overachiever I am.
Yeah. It's much harder to find private space in college. I think
I
in the
have a
future
single
I should,
dorm.
yeah. I think in the future I should be able to rent private space, but all of it's in use by like the RAs learning how to RA right
Right, that makes sense.
now. So last week we hadn't recorded in forever, so we had a whole slew of topics to talk about.
Which I still haven't uploaded that podcast. I should do that. Like that's it's been run through the program. I just have to upload it. I'll do that when we're done here.
Yeah. So you might get two podcasts that are in your time in quick succession, but in our time are like just over a week apart,
Yeah,
like a week
magic
and
of
a
the
half ish.
internet.
Magic of the internet and of Casey's slow uploading speeds.
Honestly, I might end up like waiting a couple days before I upload the second one, partly because next week I'm going to be packing for college and then leaving, and so I don't really know when the next chance we're going to get to podcast is.
Yep.
So it might not be such a bad thing if we have one on hold, which I
Yeah.
suppose would be this one. So hi, I'm probably packing for college right now.
This is true. I will be probably, if you hold this off till next week, I will be starting classes, which is good. I passed out of a bunch of the classes that I was trying to, not 241. I mean, not CS 225, but CS 125 and CS 173.
Was the
And
one you didn't pass out of the C++ one?
yeah, I
Yeah.
took for the audience members, I took four proficiency tests going into Illinois because I spent way too much time coding in high school. And so I took three proficiency tests in coding. One of them was in C++, a language I've never used before, but I knew a lot of the things on the test, but I definitely need to take that course because I need a course in C++ before I move on. And then a math test, which I also passed because I was ahead of that in high school.
Did they make you take a math test? Actually, because you did multivariable, so there's not an AP test for that. That makes sense then.
Are you still meditating?
Yeah, sometimes. I haven't been kind of keeping as much. I was going to say religion, but I realize that's kind of a poor choice of words. I haven't been keeping. I haven't been as good about it as I thought I would be, but I have been continuing to do it periodically. It definitely helped me calm down, which is a good thing.
I had a thought recently, and it's spurred by some podcast using this metaphor that meditation, what it does for people is it allows them to systematically go through and kill all the demon threads in their brain. And your brain's just constantly creating demon threads. And when you intentionally think about nothing, then you're going through and shutting off. You're like someone going through Activity Manager and closing all the things that they had running. You're like a garbage collector collecting dumb demon threads that you have running that you don't need running, that you don't have any reason to have running, but you have them running.
I like that. That's nice.
I have a habit of internalizing how the brain works as a computer system, which is probably not super good for like full understanding of how the brain works, but it might be good for if I ever want to learn how to make a computer system that copies the brain.
I think it depends on who you ask, because a lot of a lot of people who are more spiritual than I am would say you can't understand the brain that way because the brain isn't a computer. It's far beyond that. What I would say is I think that our behavior looks very, very similar to behavior that's kind of starting to be produced by more modern AIs. I saw a video where that breathing is going to be very audible on the podcast. That's okay. I saw a video where they had basically computer models of they just look like shop dummies, like mannequins, getting shot with projectiles and just leading a particle simulation. Mm-hmm. And their behavior is dictated by the neural network, and the fitness function is losing blood as slowly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And the virtual people learn to cover their wounds with their hands, which is exactly what human instinct tells us to do.
Make a note, if you can, link to that in the show notes.
That's a good point. My note is going to say bleeding AIs.
You're going to come up on that note 2 years from now and be like, what the fuck was I talking about?
Yeah, I have all sorts of things like that. Like I periodically go through my notes and just find like half-finished things and things that don't have any labels. Like, so some of my favorites are, I have a note that just says 29 minutes. I have a note that says 435. What else? I have a note that says 86 Highland Street. That's probably someone's address. I've looked on Google and it is very unhelpful because I can't figure out where it is because there's too many Highland Streets, but that's probably someone's address that I knew at some point. I neglected to mention who it was. Anybody listening here, if you live at 86 Highland Street, please let me know. I'm very interested.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Email nerdfighterit@gmail.com.
Yeah, do the thing. I do...
Go ahead.
I do have one somewhat interesting thing I can mention. I have successfully managed not to brick my new computer.
That's good. You know, I usually always don't brick my new computers, but...
I was a little worried, though, because I was installing a firmware update, and it gave me this box that was like, warning, make sure your computer is connected to a power source and do not attempt to turn it off. Doing so may leave it in an inoperable state. So that's lovely.
Welcome to Windows.
Yeah, I know. I have more complaints about Windows, too, but... Yeah, firmware updates that are very bad if they get interrupted in the middle.
Now, did you start this firmware update, or has Windows decided that it owns your computer and can firmware update whatever it wants?
I don't entirely actually know what the process was, because what I basically did is to quit absolutely everything on my computer, because I don't want anything that could cause a kernel panic. And... I just started it and let it go overnight, and then when I woke up in the morning, there was a thing that told me it was done. What I will say is that when I clicked the button, it didn't immediately do what I expected it to do, which was turn off the computer and leave it in this, like, limbo state where it's kind of on, but the OS isn't running.
Yeah.
I don't like it. There's this other weird thing that, weird thing about Windows that I've discovered that I don't like. This is going to be a recurring theme on the podcast of me saying things that I dislike about Windows. So the whole thing with applications on Windows. So, similar to OS X, every window has the like close it, minimize it, make it big buttons on the menu bar.
Mm-hmm.
On Windows, they're on the right side instead of the left, but that's not important. But what strikes me as very weird is that some applications like Chrome can have multiple windows open at once. And I haven't tried it with having the windows be not maximized, so you actually are looking at multiple at the same time. But when I have it so that all of the windows are maximized, if you click the X on one of the windows, it closes the whole program, not just that window.
That's dumb.
I don't know why it does this. If you want to just close that window, you have to just close all the tabs in it. Or I bet that if you unmaximized it and hit the X, then it would just close that.
Maybe if you're in full screen, they just kind of assume that you don't have multiple full screen windows open. Which is dumb.
Isn't the whole point of Windows that you can overlap them and you don't have to be looking at all of them at the same time?
Yeah, but using the full screen feature, but it's still dumb.
It's
I'm not saying it's not even dumb.
Full screen. Full screen is a separate thing. This is just maximizing the window, meaning that like it fills the whole space, but you still have the equivalent of a dock at the bottom.
Oh, ah, yeah. This podcast could be the
Casey thing complains about point. Windows podcast.
Well, it could be the thing people point to when. Because a lot of Windows people will say, just try Windows, it's fine. You're paying way too much for an operating system. And so we are now going to be, we are now, in part, generating a list of the things, of the small things that together make Windows worse than OS X, at least for us.
Yeah.
And why we will pay for this operating system.
It's true. And I will say that overall, I think that I made the right choice to get this computer. And I think that sacrificing having the right OS or having the right hardware in my specific case was the right choice. Windows is not unusable, but it's not very good. And I definitely don't think that I'm going to start liking it anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. It's worth noting that that is the major advantage of Windows, is it runs on anything. And even more with the Continuum project, which allows touch interface to be used almost unanimously across all the systems. It can run on ARM chips, but application developers have to recompile their apps, which isn't super easy to get developers to do.
Do you know if Windows has started, do they call them FAT binaries? I think they call them FAT binaries. Do you know if Windows has started, like, supporting FAT binaries on the Windows Store?
I didn't know there was a Windows Store. Is there a Windows Store?
There's a Windows Store, and I think... I don't know how much it's used in comparison to the Mac App Store. The Mac App Store isn't used that much.
I don't know. I do think that it's probably not a super useful thing. It's like most apps don't do that anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I guess it's tricky because Microsoft, I think, is afraid to make an ultimatum and is afraid to push because
Microsoft doesn't have the power to make an ultimatum.
I guess what I was going to say is people love the Microsoft Surface, and I think that if Microsoft had said the Surface is only using the ARM chip and we're going to make a different version that's thicker and has a more powerful ARM chip, but it's only ARM, I think that application developers would be much more motivated to recompile their apps. But
they can't do that though.
Microsoft, like, software is such a high margin business compared to hardware. I think they have enough money to do that. I think that they can do that.
So
even if they didn't make that much money off Surfaces,
I think they can't do that for the same reason that Apple can't and hasn't been for years able to go off Intel and fab their own chips. Like, I don't know if we've talked about it before on the podcast, but there's been rumors all along, because Apple doesn't like being tied to another country, but it's always...
Company,
not country. Apple is in lots of countries.
Apple is definitely tied to other countries, like China.
Yeah, Apple is tied to a lot of countries. Apple is actually very, very good about being in many, many different countries and working in many, many different countries. But being tied to a different company and their performance line. And so there's often rumors in the Mac world about an ARM Mac, and I'm sure it's always a bargaining chip on the table, but I don't think they can ever do it because at the current time, Intel's process is still smaller and they still have the process advantage. And for high power computers, you need that process advantage, or for long battery length computers, you need that process advantage. You can go.
So two things. One, for battery life, the process size advantage isn't actually that much of a big thing because due to leak insurance, smaller chips are actually starting to consume more power.
I didn't know that.
It's because of leakage currents, which I don't know that much about, but kind of my basic, the basic understanding that I have of it is, because of like quantum mechanical effects, some electrons
can
will
jump
to the
through
wrong
closed
wire.
gates.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there's always a little bit of leakage there. And as you make it smaller, you start having more leakage. Because it's not as big a thing to tunnel through.
Yeah.
And so it's starting to reach the point where that is becoming more significant than the power savings of having lower capacitance things. And
yeah. It's worth noting also, of course, that Microsoft is probably looking at Apple and seeing Apple refuses to make a touchscreen device with an Intel chip. And they have an iPad Pro, they have for a while, and they cannot get the apps they need to get to make the, like Photoshop and stuff, to write a Photoshop for the iPad.
You don't have to rewrite any code for ARM. You just have to click a button again to say, recompile this, please. And if it had been that simple, if the iPad Pro was just a desktop that was running ARM, there would be Photoshop and Microsoft Word and Word for Mac and all of those for it. The reason why there isn't Photoshop for the iPad Pro is because it's not a desktop computer. It's not running a desktop operating system. It's much more limited. It doesn't have a mouse and keyboard. It has it only has touch. And it doesn't have direct access to the file system. And so it's called Pro, but a lot of the workflows that professionals use for art and for video editing and such, it is really not designed for. What makes the advantage that the Surface has over the iPad Pro is not that it runs Intel programs, it's that it runs desktop programs.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Surface is not, you were saying you need Intel for high power computers. That's absolutely true. Nobody, Apple is making the highest power ARM chips that are like commercially available, and it's still only just barely reaching the lowest end Intel chips. But the Surface is not a high power computer. The Surface Book is more powerful, but the regular Surface is not a high power computer. And nobody buys the Surface because they're looking for computing power. They buy the Surface because they're looking for portable, and they're looking for a device you can use with touch and with a stylus.
But they still market it as a Pro. It's the Surface Pro blank, the Surface Pro blank. And I think that it doesn't matter what computer you're looking for. For the consumer to think of it as a computer, it has to be running Intel. Because Intel has done a ton of marketing, especially with Microsoft and with other companies. We have the best chips. And I think people know that the Intel chips are the good chips and the computer chips. And then the ARM chips are the... and all other chips are worse and in your iPhone, and that's why your iPhone can do less than your computer.
I think the general public doesn't think about that all that much.
I mean, so I don't think they think about ARM chips all that much, but there's always ads with like powered by Intel.
Right.
And they might not even know what powered by Intel means. But they know that computers are powered by Intel if they're good. And if they're not good, then they might be powered by something else.
As a side note, AMD's processors have actually, the most recent version of them is much better. And many people are saying it's kind of comparable to Intel chips, which almost makes me a little bit sad. Because AMD has a reputation for being worse that they're never going to live down. And now they've finally made a product that's just as good, but nobody believes them.
Yeah. I heard reports that they had gotten to the same, air quotes, process size as Intel is now, but that they are measuring significantly different things in their architectures when they're measuring process size. And so even though they can say they're at the same process size now, and that's like a statistic that people like to use a lot, that doesn't mean that they're actually as good as Intel is.
I didn't so much mean about process size. I meant that they finally got smart and started optimizing for OPC like Intel instead of just clock speed.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Speaking of clock speed, how do you like having a super high clocked computer?
You know, it's nice because I'm often not doing a whole lot of things at a time. At least not high performance things. And I actually think that it makes a bigger difference that I have 16 gigs of RAM instead of 8. My old computer had 8, which I'm actually using my old computer right now because I have been unable to find an equivalent to Audio Hijack. There's a way that I can record both of us, but I haven't been able to find a program that lets me do fancy things like splitting the two different channels so we can do all the audio trickery that we alluded to earlier to get the spatial stuff.
Speaking of audio trickery, do we want to explain what is happening for the listeners? If you're not wearing headphones, you should listen to Casey because they're always right. And put on your headphones.
Yes, listen to Casey. Do as Casey says.
And you will notice that I sound like I'm on one side of you, hopefully, and Casey sounds like they're on the other side of you, and they're louder on one side or the other. And that's not actually what's happening. What's happening is we've put in a 6 millisecond delay.
No, it's 0.6 milliseconds.
A 0.6 millisecond delay between your two ears. So it sounds like I'm on one side and Casey's on the other because the sound comes past one ear first and then the other ear.
And a significant part of how humans detect like where sound is positioned around us is because of the positioning of your ears, and because sound doesn't travel instantly, it just travels very fast. There is a very slight time difference between when a sound gets to one ear and when it gets to the other ear. And so we are simply splitting our voices into two different channels. So we have basically two recordings, one of each of us. And then we combine them and do this trick of making it my voice is delayed a little bit on one side and Josh's voice is delayed a little bit on the other side. And you get a pretty convincing stereo
conversation with both of us talking.
Yeah.
And I intentionally cut you off there just so that they would hear both of us talking at the same time for a second.
Yeah. which is interesting.
Yeah. Email nerdfighterit@gmail.com with if you like it or not.
Yeah, because I do have a serious concern with this, which because have we actually checked that mailbox? I haven't been checking it.
Yes, we have. I did when I mentioned it the first time on the podcast.
All right. I haven't gotten any comments about this from any of my friends. I'm not sure any of them are listening to it, but I do want to actually like seriously, please, if you listen to this, tell us, let us know. Because I'm really worried that this effect that we're doing is a cool novelty, but will be too distracting.
Yeah.
Because when you hear a noise on one side of you, you want to look that way.
Yeah.
And it might be weird. Like, when are people listening to podcasts? Like, when they're, I don't know, when they're driving or when they're walking or something. And maybe you don't want the distraction of having the spatial split. Maybe people just want their podcast to be mono.
I don't know. Some of my podcasts aren't mono.
All right.
Night Vale isn't mono all the time. Sometimes they go mono, but sometimes they don't. They mess with that a little bit. Granted, that's more of a fiction pod.
Right.
But also, I think that a lot of the podcasters that do the podcast in mono are just like, why wouldn't we do it in mono? We're just kind of talking. I think that it's very much seen as stereo is for music, and that, I don't think that has to be true.
That makes sense. So we'll do it on this episode, and people can let us know what they think.
Yeah, and my other concern is my concern about it actually that I want feedback on is if anybody thinks it sounds like it's echoing from one ear to the other, because we have chosen to do this at the average size of a human head, but I'm concerned that for people with small heads, it might get to the other ear
too late.
Too late for the it's people with big heads. Oh wait, no, it's small heads. You're right. Because we're doing the time travel, and it might get to the other ear too late, and then it might sound like a weird echoing effect whenever we talk, and we don't want that. And we can do something to mitigate that. Actually, we might want to do that. We might want to make it...
We can make it a slightly shorter delay, and then what ends up happening is people who have bigger heads, it doesn't quite sound like we're exactly on either side of you. It sounds like we're kind of a little bit more in front of you, or... and people with smaller heads, it sounds like we're exactly on either side of you. I don't know that there's as much variation in head size as you think there is. I think that the distance between ears doesn't vary by much more than like an inch. And I don't know, because you wouldn't think that a 0.6 millisecond delay would be noticeable either, and it really is. So
yeah, I think we might want to change that in the code.
Yeah, we can mess around with that.
So maybe that's changed in the code. We don't know if that's changed in the code yet.
Future us will decide.
Future us will make stuff.
I find it hilarious how last week we were so like hawking over each other, trying to get everything said because there was so much to talk about. And this week we really have nothing.
Yeah. There hasn't been a whole lot of tech news. Last week we had a long hiatus of the podcasts.
Yeah.
And this week there hasn't been a whole lot of tech news. And the majority of my college experience so far is just meeting people. Because classes haven't started yet.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess I have my driver's license now, so watch out.
They're driving. They could be right behind you.
Dun, dun, dun.
Also, side note, if you are currently driving and listening to the podcast, do not put on headphones while you're driving.
Yeah, that's not a very good plan.
Never put on headphones while you're driving. You got to be able to hear it when people honk at you. I know they're usually assholes, but every once in a while they're right.
I think most people understand this.
Yeah. But it's worth noting because we yelled at everyone to put on headphones. And so if you're driving and you didn't listen to Casey, that's okay. But other than that, if you didn't listen to Casey, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, clearly I'm always right. Yeah.
So this will probably be the last one we record before you go off to college.
Yeah, I'll probably have time to record another one during orientation week.
Yeah, so...
We have a full week of orientation. Not entirely sure why that's necessary, but...
Well, it's good. It's good for meeting people. I've been here for like a week now, and I have a small group of friends that I'll probably stay in touch with most of them. Right. I'll tell you if that comes true. Because they're all like in my dorm. Are you doing like a dorm community, or are you just in a random dorm?
I'm just in a random dorm.
And
I'm in the dorm that I least wanted to be in.
Oh boy. Exciting.
I think it's because it was like I had a note from my doctor basically saying that they had to either put me in gender neutral housing or they had to give me a single room.
Yeah.
And this must have probably just been like, oh, we only have so many single rooms, we have to put you somewhere, we're putting you here.
Yeah, probably.
And so I'm in Southwest, which is like the loud party dorm.
Oh boy, exciting.
Which doesn't bother me that much because I'm pretty good at like tuning out loud noises.
Yeah.
At least that means I can play my music loud and no one will care.
Yeah. I'm in Innovations at Illinois.
Innovations.
So
are you innovating?
That's the name of the thing. I'm hoping that the lady will help me with my poetry app. There's like one lady in charge of Innovations and she like knows a lot about starting businesses. She doesn't know much about engineering stuff, but she knows a lot about starting businesses and getting them off the floor and stuff. So I'm hoping.
Do you think she knows Python?
Well, I don't think she knows Python, but she also like knows who to talk to, and like, yeah, and like I compiled the app a long time ago and then the compiler broke, but like even if I got the app compiled, I wouldn't really know what to do from there, and that's kind of where I want the help. Like I can do the like coding stuff, right. But I don't really know any of the business stuff.
That makes sense. I think what you start by doing is crying because there's no effective way of distributing an apprism in Python that no one knows about. There's no platform for, like, let me discover this app that's not native. Like, no one wants to create that.
Well, Spotify is mostly written in Python. People had to discover it at some point.
I suppose. I think that Spotify... So that's an interesting question, because Spotify... well, actually, I think the reason people found out about Spotify is because Spotify ran ads at first. At this point, it's such a generally known thing that Spotify doesn't have to run ads because everyone knows them. But at first, Spotify ran ads, I think.
That's true. But you could also put it on native app stores.
I don't think Spotify is on any native app stores.
Spotify is on the iPhone store.
The iPhone client.
The iPhone app store.
I think the iPhone client must be. So what the iPhone client probably is.
It's a web view.
Exactly. So probably. So what I think the iPhone client is they're still doing all their weird, crazy non-native stuff, but they have a wrapper around it that's using Coco.
Yeah. And my friend called, one of the people I met thinks I should put it into a web app.
That would be interesting. Yeah. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. I don't know how to do web apps.
It means that you have to learn HTML and CSS, which you're not going to like.
Yeah.
How would I come up? Because it's basically a whole programming language, except it doesn't have any of the actual programming. It's just user interface design. Your favorite part.
My favorite part of coding, designing a user interface. But yeah, I'll consider that.
It is. File.io starts to get annoying with that.
Yeah.
Because at that point, it's like, okay, now you need a Microsoft Word export, and you need a PDF, and you need to be able to print.
Yeah. Well, currently my File.io system is, it saves, and you could copy and paste out of the thing.
Right. I suppose that works.
But like, then I have, but if I do a web writing app, I then have to provide storage for you on the web. Like, and I'm not providing storage for people on the web.
Yeah. Cause then you start after like paying for things.
Yeah.
You could host it on Heroku, which is free.
What is Heroku?
Heroku is a website for hosting web apps. And it has a free tier, which limits how much the whole idea is it scales automatically because they have this giant network of servers and it just gives you as much power as you need. But you have to start paying more if you start using too much power. The free tier won't expand at all. It just gives you one node. So you start having a problem if you start getting really popular. But it's not a bad place to start.
Yeah. And if I get really popular, then like...
If you get really popular, then you can figure out a way to start monetizing it.
Yeah, start monetizing. If I'm starting to get really popular, I can at least get... I'm sure I can get VC funding or something to pay for Heroku, and then I can figure out ways to monetize it or like have a downloadable version of the app. That's not a bad idea. I might do that.
Look into Heroku. It's very good.
That's a good idea. I might do that. You know me. I'm very opposed to spending any money on a project I think is very unlikely to give me money back.
Yeah. And I do think, like, I said if you get very popular, but I think that, like, the maximum number of people that a poetry writing app can appeal to is relatively low.
Yeah. Yeah.
My headphones are very slightly broken right now, by the way. Very slightly. For some reason, I'm not entirely sure why. And they're broken in a weird way, which is that the left channel has gotten very slightly quieter than the right channel.
Oh, that's weird.
And what makes it really weird to me is my immediate thought is, oh, it must just be that there's like two wires that are just barely still touching. And so it's creating basically a resistor, and that makes it quieter.
Mm-hmm.
But what doesn't quite check out about that theory to me is that it's very consistent.
That's true.
You know how on your computer you can, in system preferences, you can change the balance of your audio output?
Yeah.
I just have it set to be like 10% further to the right, and that sounds totally normal now. So 10% further to the left, I meant. But and that's very consistent. Like, I'm not having to constantly go and readjust that. That's always what it is.
Have you put your headphones to your magnets?
Don't think so.
Because
then, because, like, I agree with you.
Are you thinking that, like, one of the magnets got a little weaker?
Yeah, or something.
That's possible.
Or just not cords that there's echo in the podcast right here. There's definitely echo there. Now that it's gone.
Huh.
Mark that time and check around that to fix that.
I can mark it. I don't know what I'm going to do to fix it, but...
Just, like, cut out the entire statement of there's echo in this podcast.
Yeah, I might do that. All right, 52. So
it could also be that the wires are not like just barely touching, but they're just like one wire got stretched a little bit. And so it's still connected all the way through, but it's thinner and longer, which increases resistance.
Right, that's possible.
And it's probably not in the headphones either. It's probably in the cord.
Yeah, I wish I had a different headphone cord that I could try it with. Because I was thinking... Because it's one of the things where it's like the detachable headphone cord plugs into the right ear cuff, and then there's a wire that goes through the kind of headband that goes to the left ear cuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking that the fault is probably in that wire somewhere.
But, I mean...
I don't know.
It could be in that wire, but, like, there is still separate wires in the cord, in the headphone cord.
Right, but it's hard for me to imagine a situation that would stretch one but not the other.
I don't, if it's like a fluke that it stretched one, I don't see why a situation would definitively stretch both.
I suppose.
Like if it's bent in a certain way or something, one was weaker connected than the other.
Right, that makes sense. And this is a very cheap off-brand headphone cord, as I've talked about before, so.
So, since this is the last podcast before you go off to school, what are you looking forward to? What are your fears, and what are you questioning or concerned about, but not like in a fear way, just like want to know the answer to these things?
Right, that makes sense. I wish I'd prepared for this. Wasn't expecting an interview. I'm excited about being in classes where most of the people in the class are happy to be there and want to be learning this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy about... meeting new people and probably making new friends. I'm happy about going back to Amherst. I lived in Amherst for 12 years, from when I was 3 to when I was 15. So it's very much my childhood home. And the two places I've lived here are Concord and Cambridge. And for a variety of reasons, I like Amherst better, largely because it's a much more diverse place, and in many ways a much more supportive place. In my personal opinion, if you disagree, that's totally fine. Email Josh.
They only have one email, and it's nerdfighterit@gmail.com. The email blank is a game that ATP plays, which is a podcast you should listen to if you like our podcast. It's much better.
Accidental podcast. It's another kind of off-the-cuff podcast. It's a little bit less off-the-cuff, and it's better.
Yeah, but they each give their own separate emails in that podcast, whereas we are just giving one email to the public for feedback from podcasts so that we can both see all of the emails.
All of them.
All of them. All zero of them.
Yeah.
As of when we are recording this.
Glad to feel loved.
That's probably how it's gonna be, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, like we did not do this for the listeners. We've been very open about this for the whole time. The primary purpose of this podcast is to force us to stay in touch when we're not seeing each other all the time.
Yeah.
So those are things I'm happy about. Things I'm worried about. Changing therapists is stressful, of course. Being farther from home, being in a place where no one knows me, which is a nice thing, but also, like, because you kind of get to sort of reinvent yourself, but it's also a stressful thing.
It's also not really true. Do you know how many kids from our school are going to UMass Amherst, Casey?
That's true.
But, yeah, not many people.
I don't really, at least as far as I know, like, nobody who I'm close to is going there.
Yeah.
All the people who are going there are like, hey, yeah, I've seen that person. Maybe I had a class with them. And you know, it's a big transition going off to college, and I'm happy, and I think that I'm going to have a great time there. But at the same time, I'm sad about everything I'm leaving behind.
Mm-hmm.
People don't like change. I am not immune to that. I think overall I'm going to be happy though. Things that I have questions about.
These are going to be questions, just so the listeners are prepared, that no one's going to answer, because none of us have done this before, because neither of us have done this before.
Yeah, these are just, but, like, things that I don't know the answer to yet, but will find out.
And maybe when you do, in a later podcast, we'll bring it in, but probably not.
Yeah, probably not. So, I know that Southwest is the loud party dorm. But I don't know, like, because I'm in a single room that's all the way at the end of the hall. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, like, how big a deal is this going to be? I've heard it's going to be, like people are always playing loud music and there's, like, parties, places, and drinking. But, like I said, I don't know. And especially because I'm not interested in participating in any of that. So I don't know how much it's going to affect me.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't know really what my workload is going to be. I am taking 4 like full classes and a seminar.
Mm-hmm.
Three of which are STEM classes, and the seminar is also a STEM thing. And then an English class. And everybody has always told me engineering majors are a ridiculous amount of work. So I'm being prepared for that, which is why I'm not taking a ridiculous number of classes first semester.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm very interested to know, like, what is the workload going to be per class?
Mm-hmm.
That's about all I got right now, I think. Mm-hmm. While we were talking, I'm excellent at talking, by the way. That's why I have a podcast. While we were talking about that, by the way, I did think of a topic that might want to talk about, which is you, I believe, told me that you had some more thoughts on the building Quidditch discussion.
Oh, yes. Yes. This is something I would like to do. I think that when we talked about this last on the podcast, we talked about what essentially amounted to fever brain really complicated designs that would be like what a user would want, maybe, but not super easy to build and super complicated. And if you've done any engineering ever, you've heard KISS, keep it simple, stupid. And so I was going through in my head each of the things we needed for Quidditch and making rethoughts about what I wanted. So what I was thinking is that I would want a broom that just pumped air out of the back of it. And that's all it needs to do is pump air out of the back of it. And then the flyer, the person who's playing the game, can learn how to use the fact that a broom is pumping air out of the back of it to fly around. And that can be partly the skill of the Quidditch player, to know how to direct the air to get the best turns and stuff with the broom. And the broom doesn't need to be super easy to control.
My concern about that is that, you want controlling the broom to be difficult. You get the sense, like, reading the books and watching the movies, that it takes some practice to be able to do it well.
Yeah.
But you don't want it to be, like, the primary difficulty in the game is, all right, I want to go across the field. Now I have to try and do that, and I have to try and stop. Like, you can't have a game. I mean, I shouldn't say you can't have a game, but I think that there's a danger of ending up having a game of Quidditch that starts to look a bit like Starwall, where it's a little bit of people actually it looks a little bit like people are trying to achieve their objective, but it looks much more like people are just swapping about randomly trying to figure out how to control themselves.
I do think that you get more of an I don't think that it's that hard to control, and I think it's fairly intuitive to control. I have a rocket thruster, point it behind me, point it whichever way I want to go, and then I would have a, like, single button on the broom that was just a switch button that when you held it down, it turned on the thruster, essentially. Right.
And you'd want it to be, like pressure sensitive so you can control how hard you're pushing, but...
Maybe. Like, just a potentiometer.
Exactly.
Just, like, a single potentiometer that the harder you push down, I'm sure that's, like, a $5 piece.
Oh, but a potentiometer is much cheaper than $5.
Well, you would need a pressure-based potentiometer instead of a swirl potentiometer.
You could almost use something like VelaStat.
Oh yeah, that's true. You played around with that a bunch.
Yeah, VelaStat, for anyone who doesn't know, is black plastic film which decreases its resistance when you put pressure on it.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we would want. We could put that like in a ring around the front of the broom, actually.
Yeah.
If you held on to the front of the broom, the more pressure you put on the front of the broom, the faster you went.
That could work.
Now I just need to define a center of a broom with fans in it.
So I have a few concerns. One is it's for all intents and purposes impossible to move air faster than the speed of sound.
Yeah.
So you don't want the broom to be extra thick. And it has to have walls, so your column of air inside the broom probably isn't more than, like, 3/4 of an inch diameter.
Mm-hmm.
So is the thrust of, like a 3/4 inch diameter stream of air moving close to the speed of sound enough force to lift, like, a human adult wearing, like, football protection gear?
Well, remember, it doesn't have to lift them. It just has to push them in a direction.
Right, okay.
Because they're already in the free fall.
The skydiving chamber thing.
The skydiving chamber. So they're essentially in.
I didn't realize you were still saying that's there.
Oh yeah, that has to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the skydiving chamber has to stay there. No. But the broom itself is just, that's why you can go any direction with the broom and just shoot air out the back. And then
so at that point, all you really need is basically just you hollow out the center of the broom and put an impeller in there.
Okay. I don't know what an impeller is. Explain.
It's basically a fan. it's a fan that's designed to work in a tube, basically.
Mm-hmm. I'll look into that then.
One thing to look at, it's not powerful enough. But it's a place to start, is Dyson, the company that you know from vacuums, makes a hairdryer, which has the fan of the hairdryer in the handle. And the way it's shaped, the handle is about the size of what we want. So it's not powerful enough, but somebody has already made pretty much exactly the mechanism we want less powerful.
Uh-huh. That's cool. That's interesting. That's a good point.
That might be a place to start looking.
Yeah, and I could do more design on this later. And then, what were we doing next? So, there's that.
The quaffle's just a ball. How about bludgers?
Bludgers. So, my solution to the bludgers was just make them look like a wiffle ball, but with some of the holes filled in. Because if you have a wiffle ball with holes filled in, it's going to curve around a bunch.
Right.
Like, so a then fair amount.
So then you just get chaotic motion.
Yeah, then you just get a little bit chaotic motion, and you can hit it around, and it does everything a bludger does. And maybe it's made out of a more padded material, because we don't want to kill people, but also wiffle balls can be pegged at people. They are all the time.
And people are going to be wearing lots of padding anyway.
Yes, so that seems okay. And then...
So one concern I have about that is you definitely don't want it to just go in circles.
Well, the theory is that you have two beaters to hit it at people.
Right, but like even if nobody is interacting with the bludgers, you don't want the bludgers to just be off in a corner quietly going in circles.
I don't think that there is a scenario in which no, like, Quidditch is always displayed on the screen weirdly because it wants to spend most of the time on, like, movies and stuff, focusing on Harry, who for the majority of a Quidditch game is doing very little and just watching the Quidditch game, essentially.
Yeah, too.
And, like, looking for, like, a small, tiny thing.
Do you want to come up with something better for the Seeker to be doing for the first half of the game?
I don't know. I think that the Seeker, I don't know whether we should change the rules. I think that it might be, I think that originally we should start with the traditional Quidditch rules, because that's kind of, if we try to do this for real, start with the original Quidditch rules and then amend them if it becomes completely unreasonable.
Yeah, which we're almost certainly going to have to do some stuff with coring, but
yeah.
we cannot judge how difficult the task is based on how in real life, based on how difficult it is in the books and movies.
Yeah. But I think that, but to my point though, there will be four, there are four people on the field and there are two bludgers. And so bludgers not having any attention paid to them, there are four people in the field doing nothing else but paying attention to the bludgers.
That's true.
So, yeah.
You want them, you need them to actually, so I guess here's the tricky thing.
You do need them to have some mass to them so that when they hit someone, it actually affects the person.
Yeah.
The
wiffle ball design does allow for that.
Yeah.
But because we keep talking at the same time. One concern I have is I guess I have two concerns. One is that when you look at least in the movies, if somebody hits a bludger, it travels in a relatively straight line, at least for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And so we probably want that.
Yeah, and I think you can control that by controlling how you do the holes in the wiffle ball design.
So maybe what we want, because the bludgers are not that small,
yeah.
Is it too complicated to have a few holes always open and a few holes always closed, but have like three or four holes that just have servos so that they can open or close, and you just have them move randomly opening or closing?
I think putting servos into the bludgers is a recipe for disaster. I think that the amount of actuation that is too much. You off-weight them and stuff. Also, I think that it's a balancing act of the ball's weight. And you have to choose the right weight so that it can impact someone if it hits them. And the wind blowing up from underneath needs to keep it in the air, and it needs to. And so I think between those things, then I think that it will curve a little bit. I don't think that it will curve a whole lot because of the holes. Like if you hit a wiffle ball, even like the wiffle balls that are designed to have like holes that you could like set. Like I have a wiffle ball at home that has like the center holes have a ring on them, so you can set it so that you can throw a curveball easier. But when you hit them with the bat, they still pretty much fly straight back.
Okay. I guess that could work. I worry that, I don't know. I feel like if left to their own devices, even for a few seconds, the bludgers won't move around at all. They're just gonna sit still and spin.
Maybe we'll see.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think you would have to test it.
Yeah, I think perhaps an easy way to test this is get a hairdryer and. All right, sorry, I'm back.
Okay. I had another idea.
The thing I was saying, I think an easy way of testing this is get a ping pong ball and poke some holes in it. And then get a hairdryer and try to hold up the ping pong ball with the hairdryer and see, does the ping pong, because ordinarily if you do this with a ping pong ball without holes, it stays very steady, very stable. Does it fly off? Does it still, I knew that would happen. All right. Josh just left. So that's the end of the podcast. We'll finish this. We'll start with this topic next time. Have a great week, everyone.